Well, it's about that time. Gotta go back to the original track. UConn music no longer applies, although we are still the reigning, defending, back-to-back national champion
of college basketball. And they just got a big transfer in.
Did just get a big transfer. Terrace Reed Jr. from Michigan. So for anybody that thought UConn was not, you know, going to be on track to run this shit back, might be a little weaker next year, but also might not be. We got a lot of the portal and recruiting stuff to play out still.
Hurley knows what he's doing.
Hurley absolutely knows what he's doing. But this show is getting back to being majority football. We've got the NFL draft quickly approaching. Next week will be our mock draft show where Pat and I will alternate and make each pick of the first round of the NFL draft and hopefully beat our record from last year of correct picks, which I think we had like three total between us.
I don't think it was three.
Was it not three?
You went rogue at two and picked Anthony Richardson to the Texans. The only correct pick was Bryce Young.
Oh no. Okay.
Oh, it was bad. Well, oh yeah, not good.
We must have gotten Bijan right. We had to have gotten Bijan to the Falcons, right? Maybe we didn't. I don't know.
Either way, go back into the archives.
Yeah, we'll check it out. But either way, that is going to be our objective next week. As for this week, we've got a bunch of NFL news to go over, pretty exclusively relating to wide receivers, both good and bad or neutral news on wide receivers throughout the league. We're also going to talk a little bit about players whose fantasy value could be at risk in the NFL draft. Some of the guys who are, they're kind of teetering. They're the ones most at risk of their team drafting somebody that will screw up their fantasy value. Also, Applebee's named the official bar and grill of the NFL, a very, very random development. I wasn't sure that Applebee's was actually still in business, but we're not really going to talk about that so much as we're going to do a draft of the other potential restaurants that could have been the bar and grill of the NFL. We're actually just going to draft casual dine-in restaurants. So not fast food, but think your Applebee's, your Chili's, your Ruby Tuesdays. We're going to draft restaurants like that. Whatever. It's just a couple of them. I think those are the ones that are like synonymous with Applebee's. But we've got some other ones as well. See who can make a better list of five restaurants in there. And then if we've got some time.
I know food.
Pat does know food. We both know food. I'm a fat guy at heart. So, and then if we have some time, we'll go over some NBA playoff thoughts, a quick little look at the WNBA draft, which had some wild ratings, and then we'll get into some viewer questions as well. But to start things off, Pat, I see you've added this, but let me hit this real quick.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Yeah, this is definitely the most notable headline from today. Not NFL related, but Jontay Porter banned for life from the NBA. Brother of Michael Porter Jr. Investigation found that Porter disclosed information on his health to a known gambler. He made 13 parlays, netting over $21,000, including one with a Raptors loss. Essentially, what Jontay Porter was doing, outside of just giving information to gamblers, was taking himself out of games where he was healthy and he had people bet on his unders. So he was faking getting hurt. Luckily, I believe most of those bets got voided anyway, so they didn't actually profit off of it regardless. But man, what a dingbat this guy is, thinking he can get away with this in 2024.
A dude reels in $1 million and thinks that people aren't going to look into that.
Yeah, like I can't imagine thinking you're going to get away with this in 2024. Like, this is after seeing, Calvin Ridley get popped and Jameson Williams get popped, and those guys weren't even betting on their own sport, to actually have the sack to bet on or pseudo bet on your own sport, through a third party or however he was doing it. Kind of just wild to me and just very, very disappointing. I guess I should have expected we'd see something like this with how prevalent gambling has become, but it's just hard to fathom someone being quite this stupid to me.
Yeah, the prevailing joke on Twitter has been, like, brought to you by FanDuel, and it's like, yeah, there's always kind of going to be somewhat nasty taste in your mouth with how much these leagues have embraced gambling. It's not that what Jontay Porter did was right. What an idiot. He deserves his ban, and I think so probably stick compared to a lot of the other ones. I think O.J. Mayo was the last guy that got banned that is still banned.
Yep.
But it's just so – I feel like this was inevitable with how much gambling has been embraced, which, great, nothing wrong with a crippling gambling addiction, as we know.
It's the best of us.
Hey, you'll win eventually, but this was inevitable. I love gambling, but too much. But But this was inevitable that players are going to do this, and it was possibly going to alter the integrity of the game. And, you know, you look at some of the other ones like Calvin Ridley, like Jameson Williams. I forget the guy in the Colts who did, but he bet on
Isaiah Rodgers.
Yes, those parlays were for the Colts, though. This is really the first scandal we've seen now, outside of Tim Donaghy, the ref many years ago, where the integrity of the sport is actually at risk.
Yeah, and that's where I'm just not, like, super on board with the lazy, like, comparisons of, oh, sponsored by FanDuel, all this shit. Like, leagues partnering with these sports betting apps, like, that's not a surprise. You know, fans betting on and watching games, like, those two things go hand in hand. I don't necessarily blame the league for capitalizing on that fact, and I don't blame the league for saying also, yeah, don't bet on our fucking sport. Like, that by nature, you know, ruins the integrity of the league. You can't be doing that. Like, I don't think it has to be a one or the other. Like, oh, if you start, you know, letting FanDuel sponsor these NBA games and segments and stuff, well, yeah, obviously play. No, that's not obvious. That's not a given that you're going to bet on your own team to lose like Jontay Porter did. So this is hopefully a one-off. It's definitely not a one-off, but, you know, one of the few cases we'll see like this. And luckily it involved, you know, a pretty inconsequential player. Sorry, Jontay Porter. Really only
gotta take the fall here, pal.
Yeah, really only hit the you know, I won't even say the mainstream, but had people recognize his name this year as he got a little bit of PT for the Raptors.
Like the first MLB player banned under the steroid policy, Henry Mejia. He had to be the two N's, or is it two R's? His name was fucked up somehow.
Well, his first name was Henry, and I think it was spelled with a J. That was the weird thing.
Yeah, no, but I think there was like two N's or two R's.
Was there? Okay.
Henry Mejia. That's two R's. What the fuck?
Oh, but that is very strange.
He kind of had to be the fall guy, and I guess Jontay Porter is the NBA's fall guy.
Yeah, well, catch you later, Jontay Porter. You are a moron. And speaking of athletes doing bad things, Pat, we've kind of talked about this Rashee Rice situation a little bit. We haven't really dove too deep into it. And for me, that was because I was waiting for just the details to come out and just really get a full scope of what's going on here. And I think now we kind of have that full scope. And Rashee Rice is kind of a piece of shit. There's really no other way to put it. So to summarize what happened, Rashee Rice, who went to SMU, and current SMU football player who is now suspended, Teddy Knox, they're being sued for $1 million in actual damages and $10 million in punitive damages for the injuries caused to the victims of a six-car crash that were caused by Rashee Rice and Teddy Knox racing on a street, which I don't just, again, don't know how stupid you can be to do that. So Rice was driving 119 miles an hour when he crashed. Knox was going 116. They lost control and both of them fled the scene after. And I think that's really like the worst part. If you read the report, it's saying how, you know, some of the victims who were severely hurt were like trying to get their attention and like calling them back. And these guys just flat out walked away from a crash that they completely recklessly and stupidly caused. They absolutely could have been killed. So they are facing six counts of collision involving bodily injury, one count of collision involving serious bodily injury, and one count of aggravated assault. So this is pretty serious. I initially, when this news dropped, thought this would be kind of a blowover kind of deal, just because that's what the NFL does. I figured this wouldn't really result in much. But now, as more and more details come out, I do think we're heading towards some sort of Rashee Rice suspension. I don't expect it to be much because the NFL is notoriously soft with these kind of things, but I could definitely see a 2, even 4-game suspension for Rashee Rice. But the main takeaway is just, this is such a shitty thing to do, man. Like, it's so reckless, and, you know, there might be people that say, well, he's a kid, he made a mistake. You're 23, don't drive 119 miles an hour on a main road endangering the lives of yourself and others. Like, even going back to Jordan Addison doing it last offseason, like, and that was supposedly because his dog was having an emergency.
Yeah, at least he had a somewhat better excuse.
But even then, it's like he was going 140 or something like that. And it's like, okay, I understand. We all love dogs. I love dogs. I like dogs more than people sometimes. But you being realistic, like, you're putting many people's lives at risk by going that fast, because you have no time to react to anything that may pop out in front of you, a car, a person. Like, it is just so dangerous and reckless to do something like that. And I've lost a lot of respect for Rashee Rice, regardless of the fact that he turned himself in. It's like, you still fled the scene after.
A week.
Like, Yeah, and I'm seeing a lot of people, and this is conjecture, this is not coming from me, and I'm not accusing him of this, but I've seen people say that, well, leaving the scene can actually be smart in that situation if they had been drinking, because being caught and getting your BAC level like tested and them confirming that you were drunk when you did it, that's even worse versus the penalty.
Makes you a piece of shit.
Yes, versus the penalty of leaving the scene. Technically, they did what was better for them, in theory, if they had been drinking. We'll never know if that was the case. Well, that's the thing. I'm sure they did have something to hide, and either way, it's a shitty thing to do.
And like you said, this thing's gotten dragged out, and it's because he didn't turn himself in for, I think it was like a week, that he kind of just kept this going. And we've seen the worst-case scenario with Henry Ruggs here. I mean, it probably, a player could die. You know, Henry Ruggs could have very easily died in that accident. Like, we have seen the worst-case scenario with someone getting killed, and these guys who are public figures, to do something that reckless and that stupid, that is just easily throw your career away. I just don't get it. I just don't get what goes through their heads. And, you know, wouldn't surprise me at all if they were drunk, because how in your right mind could you think that racing at over 100 miles an hour is a good idea? Like, racing, like, I see people like there was in my town a few years ago where it was like they were racing and they were going like 60 and it was a huge deal. I mean, it wasn't on the highway, but like, you know, going 60 and it was a huge deal. So like 100, almost 120, insanity. Why do cars even go that fast?
It's a good question. It's not really necessary for a regular street vehicle to go that fast. This is some NASCAR shit, which you're very familiar with. Just a shitty situation overall. But look, it does require us to talk a little bit about, you know, put the potential fantasy implications of this. Obviously, this is so much bigger than fantasy football, but it is something that is going to be affected. And as we are mainly a fantasy podcast, at least during the season, I figure it's worth talking about now, because, look, last year, Patrick Mahomes had essentially no wide receivers that were worth a damn until Rashee Rice emerged and became a fairly reliable target at the receiver position. This is, you know, Travis Kelce notwithstanding, who also had a down year anyway. But if Rashee Rice, Pat, is out of the picture here for two games, for four games, for longer, who knows what could happen here, what does this do to Patrick Mahomes' fantasy value? What does this do to even the other players on the Chiefs? Because to me, look, Mahomes last year was underwhelming from a fantasy perspective. He finished as like QB, I want to say outside of the top four at the very least. He was tough to own at times during last year. And I think coming into this year, there was a lot more optimism. It's like, okay, Hollywood Brown on one side, Rashee Rice on the other, Travis Kelce tight end. Like, that's pretty damn good. Now, if we go back to only one halfway decent receiver and an even older Travis Kelce, how are we feeling about this whole situation?
Yeah, I was going to say, we've seen Patrick Mahomes do a lot with a little, but last year kind of showed that, like, this guy's not indestructible. This guy's not Superman, where he's going to, you know, put up these video game numbers regardless. And like you said, Travis Kelce's getting older. Not to say that his decline's going to be rapid. I'm sure he's still going to be a very productive player, just as he was last year. Again, similar to Mahomes, these sky-high expectations that these guys set for themselves. Like, it is abnormal with how good Travis Kelce has been the past few years before this past year. So, I would say Mahomes is honestly in a similar situation to where he was last year. Like, I'm not drafting Patrick Mahomes over Josh Allen. I'm not drafting Patrick Mahomes over Lamar Jackson, probably. Anyway, like, I'd probably say Mahomes would be at three tops. So, not really changing anything for me. Obviously, Hollywood, the stock goes through the roof, especially in early redrafts when you know you're going to get those probably 3-4 weeks of production guaranteed and then possibly more.
Yeah, I think it's it definitely neuters Patrick Mahomes just a little bit. But again, I'm not sure how much we're actually going to see Rice get punished for this. The NFL is just they
love letting the legal process play out now.
Yeah. And I'm just like, if they end up like settling this out of court and whatever, the issue gets resolved. Like, it sucks to say that the result is really what dictates what happens. It's like, you know, Rashee Rice was doing something just as reckless as what Henry Ruggs did. It's just Henry Ruggs ended up killing someone, and Rashee Rice happened to not kill someone, just ended up seriously injuring them. And that could be the difference between whether he's on the field or not this season. I think as far as Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs are concerned, this would take down Mahomes' value just a little bit. But yeah, like you said, Hollywood Brown's value, I mean, he becomes, I think, a high upside wide receiver two at that point. It wouldn't surprise me if he was putting up, you know, wide receiver one numbers, at least early in the year while Rice is out. But we'll see what ends up happening with Rashee Rice. Definitely a disappointing development for one of the more exciting young players from this past season. That turns out that he's just kind of a dick, inconsiderate dick, and I don't care that he is taking full responsibility. Well, if you were really taking full responsibility, you would have stayed at the scene. I don't care about your dumbass statement after the fact. Okay, a little bit lighter wide receiver news. Brandon Ayuk, the rumors persist, Pat. So something broke a couple days ago, and it turned out to apparently not be true, but there was news that came from John Frisella, supposed insider, that Brandon Ayuk had officially requested a trade, and then Ayuk's agent said, you need better sources. So maybe it doesn't sound like anything's imminent, but it is interesting that something like that would come out, you know, at the tail end of, we've been hearing these Ayuk rumors for weeks and months now.
Even before the season was over, there were still, there were still talks over whether he'd be a Niner next year or not.
Exactly. So, like, I don't know if this guy is just, like, a total hack and trying to take advantage of something that, you know, there was already some smoke, or maybe he heard something that is just a little too early to actually report, but it got me thinking.
Or maybe he's just right.
He could just be right. It got me thinking, though, you know, it does seem like there's a decent chance Brandon Ayuk gets traded here in the next, you know, couple of months or before the season or after the season. Who knows? Seems like he could be a guy that's on the move, which got me thinking about just potential best destinations and most logical destinations. So I got three down here, Pat. Number one being the Jacksonville Jaguars, who obviously lost out on Calvin Ridley. And getting Brandon Ayuk would be a pretty big upgrade, in my opinion, from Calvin Ridley, and they had the cap space to do it. And I think it would be a pretty logical move from their part, trying to continue to get the most out of Trevor Lawrence, as we hope that we can get him to finally take the step forward and become an elite guy. I feel like we've been saying this for 2 or 3 years now. But Brandon Ayuk would definitely help that cause, and having a receiving core of him, Christian Kirk, you know, Gabe Davis as a wide receiver three, which I think is the perfect role for him. I don't like the guy, but I understand he could perform in that sort of role. And then Evan Engram at tight end, Travis Etienne at the running back position. I think that would be a very good fit for him.
Yeah, and there were kind of unreliable rumors. I feel like it was a month or two ago where, like, they were talking to the Jaguars, and there were kind of some sides being exchanged, but they just weren't even close to matching up. So I do think the Jags would be certainly the best spot, like you said. And then you've got guys in Ayuk, Kirk, and Davis. You've got three guys who all do something different, so yeah. And as well as Evan Engram. So that would make for Trevor Lawrence would have no excuse. But the way I see it is we've got a week and a day until the draft. I feel like if the Niners want to trade him, they're going to want some draft compensation right now. So
yeah.
You'd think if something were to happen, it would happen in a week. Or, you know, maybe after the draft, where, like, if they draft, you know, I was looking at a lot of mock drafts today, and a lot of them had the Niners taking a wide receiver there at 31. So it could be after, but I guess they'd be in a better position to draft someone if they did it now.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple of other spots that I have kind of identified for Brandon Ayuk, and this one may be a little hopeful for me, but the New England Patriots, look, we don't have an alpha receiver sure. by any stretch of the imagination. I've said it before, we basically got a bunch of wide receiver threes. Juju Smith-Schuster even is inexplicably still on this roster, which I kind of just forget about him every day. Boo-boo apparently Schuster. Apparently he showed his junk on Snapchat the other day, which he's just continuing his fall off and
Jamal Murray looking ass
de-evolution into new Antonio Brown without having the statistical success that he had. But he's still on the roster. We don't have a great receiver, and the Patriots are a team that got, you know, confusingly didn't spend a lot of their cap space this offseason. And I know this wasn't a particularly strong free agent class, and you can roll over some of it into next year, but I think a lot of Patriots fans, myself included, were expecting a little bit more of a splash beyond just keeping kind of our own guys around in free agency. And so I think Brandon Ayuk, you know, trading for him and extending him is something we are more than financially capable of doing. And it would put a super talented and reliable piece in place for whatever quarterback the Patriots presumptively draft in about a week from now. If we don't draft a quarterback, you're not going to hear from me. But assuming they draft a quarterback, you know, having a weapon like Brandon Ayuk to lean on alongside, you know, some of the lower tier receivers like Kendrick Bourne, Demario Douglas. I like those guys. They're just not ones. And then having Hunter Henry at tight end, like, you could do a lot worse than that supporting cast at that point. As it stands, the cast worries me a little bit, but add Ayuk to that and that changes everything.
Well, and you got to think about it too. This is an incredibly rich wide receiver draft, and picking at 34, you think they would be in a very, very good position to pick one or even trade back into the first round and, you know, maybe get a guy. I've seen these mocks have been so all over the place with wide receivers, but, you know, like, maybe they could jump and get a guy like Brian Thomas, get a guy like, you know, Xavier Worthy, Xavier Leggett. There's just so many guys that are going to be Ladd McConkey. Let's go.
But, man. You're marked as a Patriot.
Exactly. So I think, while, yes, there are a lot of wide receiver threes, underwhelming supporting cast for Drake May, question mark?
I hope so. That's what I'm hoping for.
I've thought that for a while now, but for Drake May, or if it's Jaden Daniels, or whoever it is, or if it's J.J. McCarthy, God forbid, it's not the best supporting cast, but I think the draft is probably a more likely way for them to address it than giving up a lot of, you know, assets for a guy like Brandon Ayuk.
Yeah, and then the last spot I had here was the Los Angeles Chargers, who obviously moved on from both Keenan Allen and Mike Williams this offseason. They find themselves with actually a little bit of cap room now, a little bit of flexibility, and I think there is an overwhelming assumption that the Chargers are going to go wide receiver at five, as there should be that assumption. I could just see a world where Harbaugh would love to spend that pick on Joe Alt and get a receiver elsewhere. I don't necessarily think that's what's going to happen, or but
if they go at five at all.
That is true as well. But Harbaugh just, he's very clearly making a commitment to having a strong run game and having the pieces in place to do that. And I think improving the line with a guy like Joe Alt, you know, it just puts the wheels up for the 2,000-yard Gus Edwards season. But no, jokes aside, like, they're going to run the ball a lot, and it would very much fit that identity for them to go Joe Alt at five and then just make a trade for Brandon Ayuk.
If there's a chance that the Cardinals trade out of four and Marvin Harrison is sitting right there at five, you have to take him if you're the Chargers. You have to take him. With Justin, you know, a guy with Justin Herbert like that, you'd have to. You know, maybe over Malik Nabers, I could see maybe going Joe Alt, but you can't take Joe Alt over Marvin Harrison.
I understand positional need and all that, but if we look at the draft board a week from or 2 weeks from today, and we see that J.J. McCarthy was picked ahead of Marvin Harrison Jr., that just feels like malpractice to me.
I think there's a really good shot it happens.
I know. I don't think it's impossible at all. Here's the thing, though. Like, the Cardinals really need Marvin Harrison Jr. or a receiver like him, so it would have to be a pretty like good deal for them to actually move out of that spot. Like, for all the rumors that we've heard about the Vikings possibly moving up and the Cardinals being their like ideal trade partner, it's like, what are you going to give the Cardinals that's going to make them comfortable with, oh yeah, we could have got this potentially generational talent Marvin Harrison Jr., but we'll trade you the pick and roll with Michael Wilson and Greg Dortch, and yeah, they'll probably still draft a receiver in this class.
They could still get one at 11 if they conceivably traded back.
Sure, but then that's not going to be either Harrison, Nabers, or Adunze, so you're going a tier down. And I mean,
trade back up again, though.
They could. There's a lot of moving pieces here. I just, the idea of seeing J.J. McCarthy's name above Marvin Harrison is just, that's the peak of, like, when Kenny Pickett got heavily overdrafted just because the Steelers needed a quarterback, and that was a mistake.
He was from Pittsburgh.
Yeah, exactly. And that's hindsight as well. Like, I thought that was a good pick at the time, but, like, just this positional need overtaking just general logic and reason is something we see every year. And, hey, we may very well see it again this year. More wide receiver news. Devonta Smith, extended by the Eagles, which I think was a very smart move for them. They got ahead of, you know, some of these other major wide receiver extensions that we're going to see here pretty soon, including Justin Jefferson, and they kind of allowed themselves to get a little bit of a discount, I would think, by getting this deal done early. But it's not, like, a major discount. It is a $75 million deal over, it's got to be, what, three seasons, correct? And, look, Devonta Smith, incredibly good wide receiver. I think it's... it's as good as it gets to lock him down and have him alongside AJ Brown and give Jalen Hurts really all the weapons he could possibly need to succeed at the NFL level and, you know, hopefully get over the hump and get to that Super Bowl. This, more notably, I think, Pat, with all these contract extensions coming up, sets the table specifically for Jalen Waddle. I think the Dolphins are probably the ones kind of cursing the Eagles out here, because Waddle and Smith have been, like, often compared, and Waddle has actually been more productive than Devonta Smith since coming into the league. So, by all accounts, Waddle is going to demand that he gets more than Devonta Smith, and even if it's by just a little bit, the Dolphins are going to get just a little bit squeezed here by this deal getting done at this point. I don't think we expected this Devonta Smith deal to get done at this time, but the Eagles, proactive about it, got it done, and man, that 2021 wide receiver class, just the stars in there. Like, have so many wide receiver runs. Shut it. Tutu at, well, I mean, he was actually good at points last year, but like, to find guys through so many different rounds who are actually alpha wide receiver ones, or at least could be, like Jamar Chase, Jalen Waddle, Devonta Smith, Nico Collins, Amon-Ra St. Brown, all from that same draft, very, very capable of being number ones on their team. They all are, well, actually, they're not all, only three of them are number ones, but, or two, I guess Jamar Chase is the one, and Amon-Ra St. Brown is the one. Nico, Devonta, and Waddle all just have other great receivers that they're playing with, but for all these guys to have the talent level to be a certified number one receiver, that is a wild class. So just wanted to put a highlight on that real quick.
And Smith had I read a comment from him basically saying that it's great to have two wide receivers that think they're the alpha, because they're just going to make each other better. They're going to challenge each other every day. And that's so true. You know, I don't think it's in a way that they're necessarily going to, you know, these two alphas would clash, but it's just like, hey, look how good this guy is. I'm going to be better. Not in a, you know, like a vindictive way, but in a, you know, a personal gain way. And you see, at least for fantasy purposes, it can work. It can work. And we've seen in Miami, you know, Philly to a bit of a lesser extent, Cincinnati. I mean, I guess we'll talk about T. Higgins now. Expected to play for Cincinnati this year. He would still be the number two there. And like, I feel like, I don't know where he's going, but at least the last couple of years, like, there has not been like a top three round pick that I've been less enthusiastic about on a year-to-year basis than T. Higgins.
Yeah, I mean, it just, the ceiling is so low, you feel like, with Jamar Chase being the alpha there, and with just things, different things plaguing the Bengals that have kind of hurt them, like the Joe Burrow injury this past season, and then the Joe Burrow injury a few years back as well. Like, it is definitely a difficult play. He's a difficult player to evaluate and be excited about. I think you're right, because it's like, you have to draft him as your fantasy team's likely wide receiver one if you didn't take a receiver in the first two rounds, or he's your wide receiver two, and he's not a player I feel like I ever want to own just because
more,
of that, like,
way
lower
more exciting
ceiling
guys than T. I'd rather have Jalen Waddle or Devonta Smith easy
T. Higgins. It feels like the distribution, like, between A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith is a lot more even than it is with, like, Chase and T. Higgins, even though the talent level disparities are basically the same. Like, T. Higgins is a very good receiver. I think we're all kind of waiting. We're waiting on him to finally be able to be that alpha somewhere to see exactly what he can do.
I think, say he went to Carolina or somewhere, I think we would have seen that, hey, like, this guy is a wide receiver, a true wide receiver one. But now we're just kind of going to see him as this, again, you're banking on a Jamar Chase injury, which granted has happened a bit, but you can't do that with that early of a pick. You can't basically take a handcuff kind of mentality there. But yeah, I wish we had kind of seen a move. Good for the Bengals. Great for the Bengals. Yeah. I mean, they've, you know, a great duo there, some new running backs in the mix, but yeah, just very underwhelmed by a very good football player. I'd say if I had to pick like a real life football player that's great, that's not great in fantasy, I think T. Higgins kind of is the poster child.
Yeah, he's absolutely the poster child. It's like, that's why he gets drafted so high in fantasy every year. I think it's just people hoping for that talent to shine through. And sometimes it does, but it has not all come together yet for you to feel like you got a full great season out of T. Higgins, and that he was like a consistently valuable member of your fantasy team. He's a guy that, like I wouldn't be upset if my power went out and I auto-drafted T. Higgins, I'd see his name on my roster, be like, oh, okay, like that's a good play, whatever. But he's not a guy I'm willingly ever going to be like, oh, yeah, let me go get T. Higgins for sure. Like, he's a guy I really want. I think he's going to exceed his ranking and exceed his value on draft day.
And we may see his value kind of – we may see his ADP kind of fall because of that. Like, what we've seen the last couple of years, you know, are people still going to kind of buy into that? I'm not. Yeah. I wouldn't.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Pat. This is the biggest part of our show, and I think the most important part of our show. Applebee's has been named the official grill and bar of the NFL. I said it at the top of the show. This reminded me that Applebee's was even in business. And I mean, I say that, I knew they were, but like, I did not think they were even remotely in a place financially or advertising-wise,
see the commercials?
To be the face of anything in the NFL. What are their commercials? I feel like I have, but I can't put like a... Do they have anything like super memorable, or is it just...
apparently not.
I guess, not to me.
Chat, do we have anything on Applebee's? God damn it, it's the Pat show again. Which is the perfect timing. What better timing for the Pat show than we're talking about obesity?
My camera has decided.
I've got an Applebee's about 7 minutes from my house. I couldn't tell you the last time I went there. I can tell you. I went there, oh God. I was really mad. They had like dollar margaritas, so my girlfriend at the time wanted to go. And we went, and like, she only got two. And like, there's a place that has like nationally renowned wings, J. Timothy's in Plainville, Connecticut, right up the street. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I would have paid for two margaritas at J. Timothy's over these fucking boneless chicken tenders, and you drank two margaritas. Could have two margaritas at home. That's the last time I've been to Applebee's, and I was not mad necessarily about the quality of the food. Like, it was fine, but like just everything put together, I'm still mad. As you can see, I'm still not happy about it. She left, but
I could totally understand that. I have a small story about Applebee's. So my dad is actually a tattoo artist. He owns his own tattoo shop. He lives in Louisiana. So if you guys are ever in need of a tattoo, hit him up in Bogalusa, Louisiana. That town has a population of about 17.
Not
but
a real place.
You can go visit there, get a tattoo. He's very good at what he does. But my dad at one point worked at Applebee's as one of the like line cooks, and they had a policy that you had to wear their hats as part of your uniform. Now, my dad is a pretty sweaty guy, and he was like, this hat is making me drip sweat. And so he wasn't wearing it one day. One of the managers came in and like saw that he wasn't wearing it, and they're like, you have to wear the hat. And he's like, do you want to fucking see what happens when I put the hat on? Put it on, had it on for a little bit, and he's like, drip. He's like, do you want me to sweat into the food? Is that what you want? And they were like, you got to wear the hat. So someone may have had some very sweaty steaks and or burgers if you went to Applebee's about, at this point, 15 years ago. And that is just, that's kind of been my lasting memory of Applebee's and their quality of food and just how they operate. So I don't know about this.
As we'll see in the impending draft, there are many sit-down chain restaurants that I would go to before I go to Applebee's.
Yeah, we'll see if the official
grill and
bar... If
I have anything to say about it, it's going undrafted.
I was going
to
say...
I don't know if you're going to say that. I'm not picking it.
We'll see if the official grill and bar of the NFL gets drafted here. I don't have any concrete plans of who I'm going to pick here. I'm just kind of going with the flow. Pat, I have dementia. Who has the first pick? Do you know either.
Okay.
Look, you take it. You can have the first pick. Food draft.
Okay,
enjoy.
I will say here, this place, like, it's like I don't even, I don't know, sometimes I don't even consider this like a sit-down chain because it's just good. Like, it's like, I've never had a bad meal here. I'm going to go with Outback Steakhouse to start us off here. I genuinely like Outback. Like, all these other places are kind of just like, oh, yeah, it's not bad, you know. But, like, Outback is actively a place that I would say, like, yeah, like, let's go to Outback.
They got the Bloomin' Onion, and I think you know,
Bloomin' Onion's fantastic.
That's the thing about each of these places that we're going to draft. Because look, these are all the category of this is technically like casual dine-in restaurant, right? And the thing with those is like the food for most of them will inherently not be great because it's chain food. But if any of these places can have something memorable, something notable, something that is actually like above average, that's really going to put it over the top and make it draftable for me. And so that's why with my first pick, I'm going to go to a place I've only ever been to maybe once or twice, but I do love it. Texas Roadhouse. Because their bread, oh man, Their bread is wild. That cinnamon, like, butter, whatever the fuck they got,
the
dude.
The bread is great. The bread is fantastic. I don't fuck with the cinnamon butter. Like, I don't want something, like, sweet before my dinner. I don't want it. Dessert, sure, but I can't, I'll eat it, but it's just like, I just want butter. I don't want cinnamon butter. I'm sorry.
I guess I can understand that, but God, it's so fucking good. It's just,
I think
so
I've only been to one a couple times. Been to one, like, recently, like, within the last, like, 6 months, I would say I've been to Texas Roadhouse, and it was rock solid.
And then bread aside, like, their food is pretty good, pretty similar to Outback Steakhouse, honestly. So I think that kind of needs to be one of the ones off the board here.
I'm very surprised you didn't take this one, and I'm very glad to add this to the team.
Because Chili's is back, baby, back, baby, back.
Okay.
Like, Chili's, yeah. Brandon and I's commissioner of our fantasy football league, back in the day, we would just kind of be like, oh, let's get dinner. And we would just be driving down the main street, and we would not, like, say at all where we were going. And then he would just, like, pull into Chili's.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where it became a running gag where we just knew we were going to Chili's. Again, just very reliable, a lot of different stuff. You know, again, none of it is fantastic, but it's not bad.
Yeah. No, I get that. Like, Chili's, look, you got the sizzling fajitas, you got the dollar margs or whatever. I think that's where those happen. I'm not really sure. I don't drink, but I know they at least have the fajitas that they're very known for, because they're super fucking loud whenever they bring them out. And yeah, Chili's food, look, it's not bad. Like, for a chain, I'm not disappointed by Chili's generally if I find myself in their establishment. They do have the baby back ribs. Okay. With my second pick, man, there's a lot of different ways I could go here, even though they're all kind of similar in the same tier. All right, I'm going to pick one that I think might be a little controversial, because their food is, like, decidedly pretty mid, but it's kind of just an atmosphere pick. I'll take Buffalo Wild Wings here.
Sold.
But here's the thing. If I'm like, oh, I'm craving wings, I'm not going to Buffalo Wild Wings, not by a long shot. But if there's, like, a big sports event on that I don't need to, like, lock in and watch at home on my own TV, and I've got a couple of friends that I can go out with and, you know, go catch the game, like, Wild Wings is a great place to do that. There's fucking TVs everywhere. They have all the, like, apps you could want. I mean, like, their fried pickles are fine, their nachos or whatever. Like, the biggest thing is that I used to get and enjoy their boneless wings a lot, and I've realized over time that their boneless wings are just not very good. They're just very...
I don't like them.
I don't know. They're not great. So I understand that, but I will take it just for the versatility and for the vibes. And maybe most importantly, Pat, they are fucking killing the commercials lately. Oh my God, the Buffalo is so goddamn funny. Box out! So yeah, they are killing me every time.
Yeah, I'm not a huge B-dubs guy. Again, it's the kind of case where, like, hey, we're going to go watch the game at Buffalo Wild Wings. I'm like, okay. Like, their wings
are... You're like, I'll eat beforehand.
Like, their traditional wings are like a 6 out of 10. Again, not bad, but not good. Like, you can get a much better wing somewhere else. But yeah, you know, it's a great place to go and watch a game, no matter how mid the food is.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we're kicking off round 3 here. This place was kind of circulating Twitter recently, a bit of controversy, but the controversy was just people being morons. I'm going to go with the Cheesecake Factory.
Here
to start us off. There was someone was saying, like, oh, look at all the freezers, and it's like, motherfucker, their menu is like 50 pages long.
Dude, what do you think they're novel.
You think they're cooking orange chicken and then fettuccine Alfredo fresh to order? Like, no. No, I they're not. So. And, like, again, like, the food's really good. Like, the portions are huge, and you could literally get anything in the world. Like, they have everything, and the cheesecake is good too. I haven't been there in a long time because the nearest one to us is in nearby West Hartford, Connecticut. But, like, the local food there is amazing. So it's like, when you go to West Hartford, you don't go to the Cheesecake Factory anymore. But that was kind of a big deal back in the day. But yeah, just almost to the point where it's like, I feel like it's like trying to break out of this echelon of restaurants here. It still fits, but I feel like it's kind of the classy, bougie shit. Well, expensive, but you're getting a lot of food.
And I will also say I don't appreciate the disrespect that the Cheesecake Factory gets on the rounds of like TikTok and the internet in general. There is this trend of girls talking about like, oh, if he takes you to the Cheesecake Factory, saying he's like cheap or whatever, where it's not like a good place to go. And I'm like, look, if a guy is telling you he's cheap. If a guy's telling you he's taking you to a fancy dinner and then takes you to Cheesecake Factory, I understand you might be a little disappointed then, but like to act like Cheesecake Factory is some lowly, like bad, but it's pretty good. The food's good. Like, stop being stuck up. Fuck off.
This same said ex girlfriend, we used to go there every year for something. I don't even remember. God, that shit would run me like $80. Like, what do you mean? Like, you know, 19-year-old me was hemorrhaging money at the Cheesecake Factory.
That's fair. Okay. Man, you're kind of smoking me in this draft, I'll be honest. I should have
waited. I knew I would. Look at me.
I should have waited on Wild Wings because I really wanted to take Cheesecake Factory.
You could have taken Wild Wings last. Wild Wings would be picked by me.
I thought Wild Wings, because of like it being kind of a different type of place on this list, I wanted to make sure I had that variety, but now I'm regretting it. You know, Pat, we've got a few breakfast places on here.
Oh, which one is it going to be?
I'll say two of them are iconic in their own way. I don't think IHOP is really iconic in any way, but both Denny's and Waffle House are very iconic in their own ways.
I feel like you're missing one there.
You think I'm missing? What am I missing? I don't have it written
Cracker
down.
Barrel. I would put Cracker Barrel.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
In the convo with those.
The vibes of Cracker Barrel.
But where are you going to get hit with a bar stool is my question.
That is true. And I think, Pat, I am going to go with Waffle House because they're open 24/7, right? I mean, Denny's is too, but I'm pretty sure Waffle House is open 24/7. I've been at least twice the times I've visited. I went once in Georgia and once in – actually, it might have just been twice in Georgia when I went to visit our buddy Sal. Waffle House is just kind of a Southern staple. I feel like it's a cultural symbol at this point where
it's like Southern Denny's.
Yeah, it's like even if you kind of know the food's not great, it's kind of just you go for the vibes and hope the food is good enough. I'll take Waffle House just for that alone. Like I've never been blown away by anything I've gotten there, but it's just kind of a solid breakfast place, and it's got its very own unique kind of feel to it. So I'll take Waffle House and break into the breakfast section so I can go balanced here with my team.
Yeah, so I've got Steakhouse covered, and then I've got two kind of everything restaurants. Let's go to kind of a niche here. And thank God Italians aren't real, because they'd be pissed that I take Olive Garden right now.
They're not real.
Okay. They are not real. Show me one Italian person.
I mean, I'm Italian.
I am an eighth Italian. But okay. I don't... Olive Garden, like, if you compare it to traditional Italian food, it's garbage. Like, nobody is trying to call that authentic Italian food. Again, you see arguments like this, and it's just like, you are creating both sides of the argument. In that, like, but again, like, it's not bad. Like, the food isn't bad. It's just in comparison to a great Italian restaurant, you know, it's garbage. But you know, the breadsticks in college, I used to just we would order it. We would order Olive Garden a lot when we were working at the school newspaper. And one of my running gags was that I would just deep throat the fuck out of a breadstick and then just airdrop people pictures of me deep throating a breadstick. But like the salad's good. Salad's good. Believe it or not, I have eaten salad before. And soup, the chicken and gnocchi soup, solid mm-hmm. as well. Chicken is drier than my sex life, but, they kind of lose you at the entrees. Like, their red sauce is kind of garbage. Like, I stay away from it. I just go for the Alfredo. But, like, I used to love Olive Garden maybe 10 years ago. But now, Mamma Mia, authentic Italian food at Olive Garden.
That was a lot. Wow. I have to absorb a lot of information from that. Yeah, I mean, look, it's hard to have a chain that's going to produce Italian food, because Italian food is kind of, like, almost more than any other category of food, like, really known for having that home touch to it. Like, that's how you have to make it. And so to create that in a chain environment is kind of tough. But, I mean, yeah, they do a decent enough job. Their breadsticks are addicting, albeit, you know, they're pretty simple. So, yeah, look, good pick. You got, I think, the only really Italian place even in this genre.
Where's the nearest Carrabba's?
I mean, Olive Garden really has a monopoly on that sort of
at least
category.
In the Northeast.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. All right, with my next pick, I'm going to go with a place I kind of grew up on. It used to be at, I don't know if it still is at the Meriden Mall, Pat, in Connecticut, but Ruby Tuesdays, which to me is just an upgraded version of Applebee's. That, you know, Applebee's obviously sparked this whole draft, but Ruby Tuesdays is a place that, like, at me as a kid not knowing any better, like, you could tell me that was a nice restaurant and I'd believe you. Like, you go in, it's like dark, it's got this ambiance to it. It's, I mean, look, there's still TVs on the fucking, like, at the bar section, and so it can't be that nice, right? But it still feels a little more upscale than maybe your other sort of, like, Applebee's type of restaurant. And I've never really had a bad meal at Ruby Tuesdays. I think Ruby Tuesdays might be hemorrhaging money at this point, but you
all
know,
the ones nearby have closed.
I'll try to fund it and return it into its true glory, because I was truly a big fan.
Again, we're gonna you know, break the internet the fact that I eat salad, but the salad bar, great touch as well. I mean, you're getting every communicable disease. Oh shit. Are we counting buffets in these sit down restaurants?
I don't think so. Because to me it's like I was thinking of a place like Moe's even. Moe's isn't a buffet, but I'm like, it's also not really fast food. And I was like, but you sit down in there more often than not to eat it. But like, no, to me, this has to involve like a server, like ordering sort of situation.
Yeah. Okay. At least shout out Golden Corral. I feel like that's kind of purgatory. It's like if you don't go to heaven or you don't go to hell, I'm decided. I would rather go to hell than Golden Corral. I've only been once, and it just became a huge meme. So I would have taken Golden Corral right here. All right, I'm going to go with one more kind of a niche thing. Very close to Olive Garden, where the Olive Garden is in Connecticut. And another great slogan, Red Robin, yum. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Got the
probably like 10, there was just a dead body in that parking lot.
Oh dear.
For like a few days. So it had the name Dead Robin.
Oh my God.
For a little bit. And again, like, burgers, like, you can get a really fucking good burger somewhere. So again, if we're comparing Red Robin to like the top tier burgers, it's not great, but on its own, it tastes pretty good. Like I would, great onion rings. The onion rings there are fantastic. But yeah, so, you know, I feel like I got a well-rounded team. I got the steakhouse, I got the burgers, I got the Italian, and then I got two utility men in there. So, you know, I think I've covered a lot of ground here.
Yeah, you got a couple of Harrison Barnes.
Yeah, I'm seeing Longhorn Steakhouse. I didn't take Longhorn. I already have a steakhouse. I don't need Longhorn.
Yep.
And honestly, God, there was a Longhorn Steakhouse, I think, right across from Fenway Park. I don't know if it's still there or not, but I would go there before. I haven't been to Fenway in like 50 years, and that's for the better. But that's the only recollection I have. One came up in Sunnington, right near Target, and haven't been.
Yeah. I've actually went to that one like shortly after it opened, and food was pretty good. It was really cold in there, and the service was slow, so like it doesn't stick out in my head very much. And I also essentially have a steakhouse with Texas Roadhouse, so I don't feel the need to draft them either.
And I would say Texas Roadhouse and Outback are both better than
I got to figure out what direction I want to go here with my last pick. There's really only a few more things to choose from. I'm going to have some level of redundancy, whether I pick another breakfast place or another, you know, I do go another steakhouse, or I go with TGI Fridays, which is just Ruby Tuesdays in a different font. And I think TGI Fridays,
or are you going to take Applebee's?
Actually not exist. I could save Applebee's from going undrafted. But I think I'm going to take Denny's. I'm going to double up on the breakfast here. I'm not going to let Denny's go undrafted because, again, you know, I think full picture here, and their social media team is also very funny. And just the culture with the grand slams and all that, like, they are definitely an iconic sort of franchise. So I'm going to take them to round out my team. Them and Waffle House kind of form my breakfast backcourt here, and you know, hopefully can lead me to the promised land.
I'll be honest here, Bran. I got my top five picks on my big board. I cleared my. These were the five picks that I wanted.
Really?
So this worked out very well. this worked out very, very well for me.
Yeah.
God, I'm hungry now. It's only 5 o'clock in the old East Coast of the United States here, but I'm getting a little bit peckish now. I might have to stop somewhere. I might have to stop somewhere tonight. But see, the thing with like Ruby Tuesdays and you know, like TGI Fridays, for example, I would just go to Chili's. If they're in, again, where I live, everything, there's everything within a 15-minute radius. Yeah. So, like, I would never go to Applebee's or something, you know, except for dollar margaritas, son of a bitch. So, but just to note, some undrafteds here. IHOP, Applebee's, the official sponsor, goes undrafted. We got Cracker Barrel, which if I had another pick, Cracker Barrel was the next pick for me. I love Cracker Barrel. Only been there for breakfast, though. Never had, like, their lunch and dinner food, but love their breakfast. We mentioned Longhorn Steakhouse, TGI Fridays, and Red Lobster. I've never been. I don't know if there's a Red Lobster.
I've been either.
I don't know if there's a Red Lobster. I think there's a Red Lobster in, like, Wethersfield, Connecticut. No.
There's a lot of W towns in Connecticut. It's a lot.
Let's see. I got to put my location in here so Joe Biden can try and find me.
Okay.
There's one in Wethersfield. There's one in... And there's one in North Haven, Connecticut. Neither are particularly close to me.
No.
But again, like chain seafood, like I love seafood. But like...
Yeah, I've only recently warmed up to seafood, so I don't know that
I'm on a seafood diet, actually.
Oh, yeah, you seafood, you eat it? Yeah.
Except vegetables, yeah. I'm allergic, okay. But...
Yeah, you had a salad at one point, you confirmed. Okay, that'll do it for our casual dining restaurant.
This was fantastic.
This was great. Look, thank you to the NFL for
outside of the movies, this was probably my favorite draft.
This was a good one. I might even put up a poll for this one to see how we feel about this one, because this is a very important
I think you have to, because I think
you smoked, you know, people me, will but see, also, yeah.
People will see it on the story, and like, you know, if they're the kind of non-football fan, they'll just swipe, but everybody likes to eat.
Exactly. Everyone loves food. All right. We will now move on to a fantasy segment, Pat. Again, with the draft approaching, there are plenty of players who are going to see their fantasy value, or at least their theoretical fantasy value, take a hit if their team drafts somebody. So I just wanted to go over a couple of players that I think this is especially the case for. They are especially at risk. And to start out, so this, you hear all the talk about this being a weak running back class. And while that's true at the top, it's not any weaker than any other year once you get past the first round. Like, every year we like to see, you know, one or two guys that are bona fide first-round running backs. Last year it was Bijan and Jahmyr Gibbs. This year doesn't have that, but it's not any weaker further down the list than any other class. So that means there's still plenty of opportunity for running backs to get drafted and eat into the workloads of already established players and actually be productive in their rookie years. You know, it's not going to be anybody that you're going to take in the first round in fantasy probably, but it's still going to be guys that can be difference makers. So here are some of the players currently in the league that I think are most at risk, Pat. Number one,
watch.
Number one has to be Gus Edwards. I mean, we talked about the fit. We talked about the fit for him in LA, with how much they want to run the ball, reuniting with Greg Roman, and that's all great. But I think there's still plenty of skepticism about them rolling into the season with just him. I think they have to draft somebody somewhere.
Because I mean, there's no way.
What is the depth chart even behind Gus Edwards? I mean, I don't think Josh Kelly's around. I don't think
Isaiah
Kelly's
Spiller?
Around.
Is he still?
Yeah, it's probably Isaiah Spiller. Let me pull it up. It's Isaiah Spiller and then Elijah Dotson and, man, Jarrett Patterson. I remember thinking he would be good once with Washington.
He was disgusting at Buffalo.
Yeah, so you've got Gus Edwards is definitely a candidate, but it'll be interesting to see like what level of player they bring in to compete with him, because, you know, obviously, they're not going to spend their first pick on him at number 5 overall. I don't know that they'll spend even a second rounder on him. The Chargers may just have other priorities than running back. This could be a case where you see a 4th or 5th round guy come in there, and then you start to hear about the camp battle because this guy might just be a little more talented than Gus Edwards. Either way, I don't really see a world where Gus Edwards isn't still like a touchdown vulture kind of guy. Like, I think he's going to have his fantasy value, but it's just a matter of, can he be a guy who's a consistent RB2, or is he going to be like kind of a boom bust flex?
I think he's probably more of a boom bust flex. Yeah, boom bust flex. But we saw last year when he went on that touchdown tear
Jeez, he was great. You know, he had plenty of value, but like you said, doesn't catch the ball. Greg Roman and Greg Roman offenses, they don't throw to wide receivers anyway. I would be stunned if they don't bring someone in. And obviously, everybody's going to be saying Blake Corum. And yeah, sure. Like,
yep.
Go for it. I mean, this Charger team seems like they're going to be really focusing on offense, whether it's wide receiver or running back, offensive tackle, offensive line, interior. So I see it. Obviously, there's the fit. He's familiar with Jim Harbaugh. But I think whoever is there with Gus Edwards is going to have good fantasy value. You know, probably is a bit more of a pass catcher. The touchdown issues, the touchdowns are going to be an issue. But of the rest of these guys we'll talk about, I actually think the Chargers might draft the running back first out of all of these teams we talk about.
Even more so than the Cowboys.
Well, they just signed Royce Freeman.
Yeah, the incessant media coverage of them signing Royce Freeman. It was just the fact that, and some of them were joking tweets about like, oh, they got their new RB1, whatever. But like, just to see all the tweets about the signing in general, as if it was something we should care about. Like, I made a joke yesterday because I legitimately just yesterday found out the Steelers signed Michael Pruitt and was able to make Arthur Smith jokes. But I'm like, the Royce Freeman signing should have gotten the same amount of fanfare that the Michael Pruitt signing got. That being almost none, to where I don't hear about it for a few days. Like, the fact that I saw so many different people reporting it. Stop talking about the Cowboys just because it's the Cowboys. Well, Royce Freeman is not going to do shit. It is awful.
He's not.
Royce Freeman is not going to be any sort of fantasy factor, even if they head into the season with this being their depth chart. So I don't care about signing Royce goddamn Freeman. But the player that we are going to talk about, because I think this guy would have, you know, plenty of fantasy value if the season were to start today, and that is Rico Dowdle, a younger guy who, you know, had some flashes last season, but he's also a guy that I assume will be at some risk in this upcoming draft. Jonathan Brooks is getting mocked to the Cowboys a lot. And look, Texas. Pat, if Jonathan Brooks gets drafted to the Cowboys, I absolutely see a world where he is a top two round fantasy pick. Just because of the offense that he's in and the sort of lack of competition. Like, he's a different level of player than Rico Dowdle and especially Royce Freeman. So health permitting, I think he could be a real fantasy asset. But yeah, Rico Dowdle is definitely one guy that's in just purgatory right now, and his value will completely depend on who the Cowboys draft and when they draft them.
Again, stunned if they did not. But I mean, I'm stunned that they didn't bring in any kind of running back. I mean, yeah. I think if they don't bring in another running back, Deuce Vaughn has some reasonable value as a deep league PPR flex. Nothing more than that, but I just can't see where the Cowboys are win now, win now, win now. And Jerry Jones even said, like, hey, we're still trying to win, but we're trying to do it by locking up the guys, by paying our guys. And that's fair. Like, yeah, you've got a lot of really good players on that team that you want to lock up. So for all intents and purposes, you'd think it's going to happen here in the draft, where this is where they're going to fill their massive need at running back. And the nice thing, too, for them is they're not going to have to do it in the first round. They may not even have to do it in the second round. They can get their guy. But if they got a guy like Jonathan Brooks, I don't know if I'd go as far to say what you said, but I definitely think like he would be a clear-cut starting running back in a very good offense with some Rico Dowdle.
Yeah, I just think that talent level, you know, if he is truly fully healthy, like it's hard to overlook the incredible upside of that and what would presumably be, you know, a pretty solid workload for him as well. The next guy I have on here, Pat, is one that I'm less convinced that they'll definitely bring in a running back. I could very well see them going into the season with this guy as the starter, and it's Devin Singletary. It's just that he's a guy who, you know, he doesn't have this overwhelming talent. He's a guy who's been kind of off and on throughout his career. So I could really see this one going either way, but it's a matter of, you know, if they don't draft somebody, then Devin Singletary's probably an RB2 on your fantasy team to start the season. Yeah. If they do draft somebody, he could very well be completely useless. So he's just somebody who's really teetering on the edge of both, but he's not one that I'm like, oh yeah, the Giants are definitely looking to make that move. They've got so many other needs.
Well, that's the thing is, I think you've listed, you know, we've got some more running backs here. I think Devin Singletary is either the safest or the second safest here I definitely think the Giants will draft a running back, but it'll probably be in the late rounds. And I think we now kind of saw what Isaiah Pacheco did as a seventh rounder, just absolutely just go and steal that job. So we kind of assume it's going to happen every year now. Like, oh, it's just inevitable. It's just a matter of time. No, it's not. Like,
it doesn't happen that much.
It doesn't happen very often. So I think that'll be a case where, like, the Giants will draft somebody late, and all the fantasy pundits will be like, oh, it's only a matter of time. It's Devin Singletary. He'll hand the job over to him. No, he won't. I'd say it's more likely than not that he won't. So, you know, I think Devin Singletary, like you said, they have so many needs. Who knows? They may have to draft a quarterback in the first round, and then a dire need at wide receiver as well. They could always afford to bulk up on the offensive line. I think, like you said, running back is not their top priority. And Devin Singletary, they obviously are cool to roll with him.
Yeah, no matter who they draft at running back, if they draft one, it's definitely not going to be a guy that you look at him and you're immediately mentally slotting him as the RB1. Like, there's just no way. There's not a lot of guys in this draft anyway that you would do that, but it's certainly not, you know, considering we assume the Giants aren't going to touch that position until, you know, at least day two, obviously, but probably more like day three of the draft. Yeah, we're looking at day three for them to address the running back position if they do it. Pat, the guy that I'm still just waiting for the pin to drop, we're going to keep talking about it. It's got to happen eventually.
This man.
I don't hate him. If things stick this way, I will love his value in fantasy next year, but it is Rashad White, and we said it time and time again. The Bucks themselves have said it. They would like to get a guy to take some of the workload off of him, and I think Rashad White is Chase better Evans. Suited. Stop! We're doing this dance every time I bring up Rashad White. Shut the fuck up. Rashad White
is a guy that... I'm just saying what Todd Bowles said.
Whatever. Rashad White is a guy that's better suited to at least split work with another running back and be kind of, you know, not a third down specialist, but a guy that, like, they could really lean on his receiving capabilities and just give him a little bit of a break on the early downs occasionally. We'll see if they end up drafting somebody, because for right now, yeah, Pat, we talked about it a million times, like, their depth chart has no actual threats. Fuck Chase Edmonds. There's no actual threat to Rashad White's fantasy value here right now. But if they get somebody with any level of upside, I'll definitely have my eyes open.
You're forgetting Sean Reynolds as well.
Sean Tucker? What about Sean Tucker?
Did I say Reynolds?
You said
Who
Reynolds.
Who the fuck is Sean Reynolds? He's like a minor league pitcher for the Padres, I think. Sean Tucker. Jesus
name
Christ.
Didn't even ring a bell for me. Look, nobody's a bigger Sean Tucker truther than me. Anybody listening to this pod can go back and hear me talk about him like he's Adrian Peterson part
but
two.
But again,
so.
Look at Sean Tucker. Everyone was like, oh, inevitable. Just a matter of time. Yeah. No, it's not. Like, no, it's not. And I think we'll probably see maybe a little earlier, but it's clear that they didn't mind rolling with almost exclusively Rashad White. I do think they're going to want to take the workload off him just for health's sake. You know, it's so much easier to break down if you're on the field every fucking play. So I think they'll get someone, but I think they will get that whoever they draft will be the complement to Rashad White.
Sure.
I don't think he will necessarily eat into his time, like maybe like a 70-30 or maybe even a little more, 80-20 even a little more, but I do think they will. But again, maybe a little earlier than the Giants. Maybe we're talking day two, early day three, but I think Rashad White's job, for all intents and purposes, is safe.
Yeah, I think we're looking at more of a situation like what the Chargers at least tried to do with Austin Ekeler over the last couple of years, where it's like your starter, friend of the pod, Austin Ekeler, your starter is a guy who is, you know, very adept at pass catching, maybe lacks a little bit in between the tackles running, but he's just such a talented player that he is your de facto starter. Then if you can find a guy just to take, you know, some snaps from him that you can actually rely on here and there. Because, I mean, yes, Chase Edmonds did take some work from Rashad White at the end of the year, but that was strictly so Rashad White didn't fucking die. It wasn't because Chase Edmonds was any sort of net positive on the field at all. Same with Sean Tucker. As much as I wanted him to be a positive, it seemed like every time he stepped on the field, he was getting stopped behind the line of scrimmage. But just a guy that I'm watching because of the Bucks and the intentions that they've stated surrounding his workload. I'll be very curious to see what capital they spend on a running back if they do spend it. Pat, your boy, Zamir White, I'm putting him on here just because he's not a guy that we've seen extended success from. And so he's a guy that, again, he's on the fence right now. Like, if after the draft they don't take anybody, it's wheels up. Like, he's the only guy there.
Oh, my God, dude.
But if they do take somebody...
I'm going to be the fucking conductor on that train. Pat, if he's... Again, similarly to Rashad White, I think One, I do think the Raiders will draft a running back, possibly a little higher, you know. But I do think Zamir White's the guy. Still, like, we saw, he was like an automatic, like, 17 carries for 75 yards and a touchdown in those handful of games he played. But they obviously liked him enough to let Josh Jacobs walk at his asking price, and they didn't bring any, they brought in some running back, I think some old ass, I can't even, I may even be wrong here. Let's see, Raiders depth chart, I should know this, shouldn't I?
Got Amir Abdullah, I believe.
Fuck directly off. Oh, Alexander Mattison. That's
oh no. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
I forgot about that fucking bum. But I do think they bring someone in, and again, I don't think it eats significantly into Zamir White's. It will be some, which will hurt his stock. But you know, we're looking at again a team that likes to run the ball. Even when Antonio Pierce took over, they liked to run the ball. And if Zamir White is the guy that he is now, oh boy, get on board, folks.
Yeah, and then the last one I have here is Zach Moss / Chase Brown. This one I'm a little less worried about because the organization has shown some faith in Chase Brown. And then when you bring in a veteran that, you know, performed pretty well last year at times in Zach Moss, and there's not necessarily a huge vacancy for the running back position. It's just I look at two guys who, again, neither one has seen sustained success in the league, and so that leaves you wondering if maybe they could bring somebody in, but I'm a little less worried about this situation than some of the others.
Zach Moss hasn't really had an opportunity to sustain his recent success yet. Mm-hmm. Obviously getting pulled off the field for Jonathan Taylor, rightfully so, but he looked great. He looked great in that sample. But yeah, I don't think Cincinnati would do it. I mean, they seem to really like Chase Brown to the point where they got rid of Joe, you know, traded Joe Mixon. They were going to cut him. And I think Chase Brown does end up being the guy. I think at the end of the year, we're looking at a team where, like, Chase Brown is the guy over Zach Moss. Because, again, way more explosive. I remember sitting in a hospital bed watching him carve up the Jaguars. Had that big, like, 50-yard touchdown catch and run. Kid's explosive, which Zach Moss kind of isn't. Zach Moss is going to do what Zach Moss does. But I think, again, these two are safe. Kind of a gross backfield going into drafts, but I certainly like Chase Brown a lot more than I like Zach Moss right now.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. We'll move on to receivers here. And, Pat, I think this is just the nature of how strong the draft is this year for the wide receiver position versus how relatively weak it is for the running back position. All the running backs we just talked about have a reasonable doubt that maybe their team won't draft a guy or won't draft a significant guy, and all those guys could actually head into next season with a sizable workload. For pretty much every receiver we're about to talk about, their time is ticking. Maybe one or two will be shattered. But yeah, they are shattered. It's strictly if the season began literally today, they would be massive fantasy assets, but the clock is ticking. We'll start with Khalil Shakir.
Okay.
I thought you were disagreeing with Khalil Shakir. I guess some of these other guys wouldn't be massive, but they would still have big roles. Khalil Shakir is a guy who I think he has shown a lot of flashes throughout the past few seasons, and we've kind of been hoping for a little bit of a breakout from him, and we may still get it with him kind of I don't know that he ascended the depth chart since they brought in Curtis Samuel if they bring in a wide receiver one, but it would be very surprising if the Bills did not draft a new wide receiver one here, be it Brian Thomas or Xavier, whatever.
Whichever Xavier you want it to be.
Yeah. I mean, it's a late pick that they're going to have to use to get this guy, but we very much assume they are going to draft some level of a Stephon Diggs, Gabe Davis replacement.
Most of the wide receiver action is either going to be in the top 10 or it seems in the 20s. There's a bit of a lull, at least in mock drafts I'm seeing, between, you know, the teens picks. So
yeah,
they very well could have, you know, their, you know, cream of the crop after Jesus Christ, Harrison, Neighbors, and Odunze. They could have whoever they want. But this one is guaranteed. But I also think that, like, I think we're going to see a lot of Dalton Kincaid this year.
Yeah.
Don't be surprised when we roll around to the season and plant our flags, pick our Pats pals. I would not be surprised to see Dalton Kincaid there. But yes, they still need to. Even if Dalton Kincaid's going to be one of the focal points, you need to bring in somebody else. And they wouldn't just trade Stephon Diggs if they did not have a plan.
Yeah, so look, the Khalil Shakir breakout, look, maybe it's upon us, but it's not going to be upon us with him as wide receiver one. I think everyone would be very, very surprised if the Bills don't spend a first-round pick on a wide receiver after the trade they just made, Diggs to Houston. Okay, the next guy here, Pat, Josh Palmer. I'm putting him down because he seems to be a guy that pops up literally every season in fantasy football. He becomes a hot so waiver pickup. He becomes a hot waiver pickup whenever Keenan Allen or Mike Williams inevitably go down. Now they're both out of the team altogether, and so it leaves some opportunity for Palmer. And honestly, Pat, Palmer will probably retain some of this opportunity regardless. But for now, we are assuming the Chargers are going to take a wide receiver, even though I think it'd be very funny if they took Joe Alt at five. We're assuming they're going to take a receiver at five to get Justin Herbert some kind of weapon, because right now all it is drops McGee, Quentin Johnston, and eternal wide receiver for Josh Palmer. So they got to get somebody there. They don't even have a tight end. Their tight end is some nameless bum, I'm pretty sure.
The Rams got Colby Parkinson. The Chargers got somebody.
Hold on, I'll pull it up because now I want to know. I just know Gerald Everett fucking left. So yeah. Los Angeles Chargers, yeah, Will Disley and Hayden Hurst and Donald Parham and Stone Smart.
Ew. Shut the fuck up.
Gross. So we're not banking on any sort of consistent production from any of those tight ends. So Chargers likely going to draft a receiver. Again, season starts today, Pat. Josh Palmer, I think, is a PPR, like, maybe not darling, but very, very interesting, because he would be playing essentially 100% of the snaps on that team. And he has popped up with these little spikes of productivity pretty much every season. So I don't know what his numbers would look like if he was actually given a whole season to start. We might find out, Pat, because if they only draft one real receiver, they may start Palmer as the two rather than giving undeserved playing time to Stonehands over there.
Well, you know how Palmer works, where when he's in your lineup, he has two catches for 12 yards, and then when you have him on your bench, he catches a 60-yard bomb. Like, I feel like that's just as a given as it was Keenan Allen and Mike Williams getting hurt.
Yeah, Palmer is decidedly, again, maybe wide receiver four is harsh, but like, career wide receiver three. Like, he is built to be a three at best. That great. But if things stood as they are now, he'd have a lot of fantasy value. We'll probably see that take a big hit, though, in a week. Okay, next, the Patriots, Pat. I couldn't really identify one or the other who was going to take the bigger hit. Kendrick Bourne and Demario Douglas both had stints. They both had stints this year where they were fantasy relevant. And this is one that I could see maybe not changing, because the Patriots are certainly not going to spend their first round pick on a receiver. It's just not as inevitable as the other two teams. I think the Patriots will come out of this draft with a receiver. I'm just not convinced it's going to be somebody that's going to immediately knock these guys down the depth chart, given what we've seen from them, you know, last year and in priors. Like, Kendrick Bourne's a guy that when he's on the field, he's pretty damn good. Like, he's a fun fantasy asset to have as long as he has a quarterback that can get him the goddamn ball. Just Mac Jones just could not do that at points last year. And Kendrick Bourne still had maybe a 2 or 3 week stretch where he was fantasy relevant before he went down for the season. Demario Douglas, electric player, different type of player than Kendrick Bourne. One of those kind of gadget sort of guys. He'll have his own value, but they are both still teetering, because if the Patriots draft a receiver, this is not going to be a high enough volume passing offense that you can support, you know, new rookie wide receiver one plus Hunter Henry, who's going to eat any touchdowns whenever you do get to the red zone, and then having two receivers like Bourne and Douglas fighting to be the wide receiver two. Yeah. So they are both very much at risk.
You know, even a new offense here with Alex Van Pelt, they still like to run the ball in Cleveland. You know, that was part of the reason why they kind of moved on from him, because they wanted someone who could cater to Deshaun Watson more so. One second. Sorry, loud throat clear. So it'll be an upgrade from whatever the Patriots offense has been doing in terms of running the ball, but I think it's still going to be a run-first offense. They're going to get a wide receiver, but like, this is one of those situations where I don't think I'll draft a Patriots wide receiver until I've seen something from that offense. So like, going into this year, I mean, at 34, they have an opportunity to get a really good player, but I'm out. I'm out on these guys no matter what happens.
I understand that. To me, there is the chance, and I don't want to, you know, dismiss this at the risk of sounding like a biased and over-optimistic fan, but like, say the Patriots get Drake May. I mean, it's a non-zero chance that the passing offense evolves into not CJ Stroud level, but something similar to that. Like, it's possible that, you know, this offense ends up being something. God damn it, here we go. My camera again. It's possible that this offense turns into something that
Aren't you the professional here?
I have a nice camera, so it dies. That's the problem. They could potentially get to a point.
That's why I look like shit.
That they support at least one, if not two, wide receivers if Drake May or Jaden Daniels turns out to be a guy that can adjust to the NFL quickly. So it's just the Patriots are one of those situations that there's so much unknown that it might be worth taking a stab at it just to see how it works out. Like, Kendrick Bourne's going to be free in fantasy drafts. Demario Douglas is going to be borderline free in fantasy drafts. I think Bourne might just be a little lower just because the injury will knock him down. Demario Douglas had relevance at the end of the year, so might be some recency bias there. Hunter Henry will be probably free-ish. I mean, he might get drafted. I don't know.
There's a lot of casuals.
Yeah. There's a little bit of upside here, so I just don't want to ignore that. And then you've got Michael Wilson, Pat. I think Michael Wilson's downfall is also
Michael Wilson guy last year.
Also inevitable. But look, Kyler Murray and the Cardinals offense, there is a chance that they can support a couple of weapons. My concern is that I really like Trey McBride, and so if they bring in Marvin Harrison Jr. I expect Marvin Harrison Jr. and Trey McBride to be the more consistent pieces, while Michael Wilson is kind of a pop-up here and there kind of guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think he could be kind of like a regular wide receiver two lining up on the other side of Marvin Harrison or whoever they get if they trade down and get a Dunze.
He'll play all the snaps for sure, because it's not going to be Greg Dortch.
I mean, he's got great size. That's the thing is, like, that was the thing going into last year, was that all the Cardinals' other receivers were small. Hollywood, Greg Dortch, Rondale Moore. And he was the big guy. He was something different. But now if they go out and get another big guy, then he becomes a little more redundant. Like, I have him on a dynasty team. I'm not, you know, particularly optimistic about him this year, but I think we're going to see a better Cardinals offense with Kyler Murray at the helm. And, but Michael Wilson, I will probably not be all aboard the Michael Wilson train this year the way I was last year.
Yeah, sadly, the opportunity is just a little less clear. It's not going to be there quite as much this year, assuming they do stay the course and draft Marvin Harrison Jr., which when you have a team built the way the Cardinals do, and by that, I guess I just mean you have an above-average quarterback when he's healthy, like, you got to get him some weapons. And I think the cast they have right now is not really going to cut it, and having the opportunity to add such a difference maker really puts the Cardinals, you know, in an interesting spot. Like, you never know where these teams can end up. It wouldn't shock me that if they end up as like a borderline wild card team, but they would need a guy like Marvin Harrison, I think, to really have a chance at doing that. And then the last one, I mean, Pat, I think the Giants are probably going to draft a receiver, but they just have no wide receivers worth owning. So
Darius,
it's like,
Slayton didn't show up today either.
I wanted to say, like, oh, whoever, you know, if the Giants draft a receiver, their current guys are going to take a hit. Well, even if they didn't draft or no matter what with the Giants, I don't see any players on their depth chart that you're excited about taking. I mean, it's Darius Slayton, it's Wandale Robinson. Darren Waller might fucking retire still. Like, we don't know what's going on there.
Jalen Hyatt, you know, I mean, they used reasonable draft capital on Jalen Hyatt, but
yeah,
the offense was just so bad last year.
Yeah, and maybe it'll be better with Jones healthy, but who knows?
Or a rookie.
Or J.J. McCarthy.
I think there's a great chance now with the possibility that Arizona trades down. That would give the Giants Malik Nabers, which would be fantastic. Even with Daniel Jones being as questionable as he is, not health-wise, just performance-wise, he'd still be, with the lack of competition, Malik Nabers would still be a very... I'd call him, just spitballing, a low-end wide receiver two, mid-wide receiver two. He would be a guy being drafted to start in most leagues, if that's the case.
Yeah, 100%. There's definitely a really, really strong opportunity to step into here because, like, I mean, it won't happen, but looking at how bad the Giants receiving core is, like, a guy could come in here and get 12 targets a game.
Hello, legitimately. Isaiah Hodgins.
Like, a guy could come in here and be just the only guy on that depth chart that's worth a damn, and he likely would be. So it's an interesting situation to watch. There's just not really any players that are going to take a major hit from it because these players are just not that great to begin with. All right, that'll do it for that. Pat, we'll touch on just real quick. NBA playoffs are starting. We got some play-in games that have already concluded. We do have another battle. Any initial thoughts on the NBA playoffs and what you expect to happen? We don't got to dive too deep, but just a little quick hit.
First of all, I did not want the Lakers to win that game last night because I actually think they would have given the Thunder some problems. I'm not saying they would have beat the Thunder, but I think they would have you know, a very inexperienced team against a very experienced team. So, but I don't think they stand a chance against the Nuggets. I think they'll get one, maybe two games from them, but I really didn't want them to win last night, but I don't want the fucking Celtics to win, dude. Like, I was thinking about it.
No.
The Celtics are my least favorite team, even over the Red Sox. The Celtics are my least favorite team in any sport. They are so good. They do everything. They're deep. They are such a... Sam Hauser's out here shooting 40-plus percent from three. Like, just everything is falling into place perfectly. And our only hero can be Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, dude, if he does, it would be the funniest thing of all time.
Jimmy Butler has the opportunity to do the funniest.
He really does, though, like, legitimately, if they knock off the Celtics again.
I don't think the Thunder come out of the West. I just think that they're not quite battle-tested enough, especially against the defending champions. I do think the Nuggets come back out of it, and it's them and the Celtics, and I hope to God that you are at another parade next year.
I do too. I've been really just way too spoiled as a fan lately. I mean, the Patriots are at their downfall, but I don't think anybody's feeling too bad for me about them considering what I saw up to this point in my lifetime. But yeah, Pat, I mean, we're also in a time of back-to-back champions. I mean, the Chiefs did it. UConn just did it. Let's have the Nuggets go do it. I mean, screw it. I think if I did have to pick, I would also pick the Nuggets to win it just because – you know, the East is so painfully weak, and the Celtics are just not a team I trust to show up in the playoffs.
Giannis is hurt with the Bucks.
Like, Giannis is hurt right now. Whoever the NBA champion is, I think, is going to come out of the West, whether it's the Nuggets or somebody else.
You really think the Celtics are going to choke?
Yeah, I think they'll probably get there.
I hope they choke. I'm not confident that they will. I hope they do.
I know. I mean, they got there a couple of years ago when they faced off with the Warriors and then choked that. But I could see them getting there. For now, though, I am going to go with the Nuggets. And I think one thing to note about the Nuggets that you don't necessarily know if you don't follow the team as closely as I do is that they pretty notably let their foot off the gas as the playoffs approach, and then they really step on it. So it's like, if you feel like you haven't heard much about the Nuggets lately or they're kind of sputtering, they did this last year too. They're a playoff team. They're built to be a playoff team, where on the other hand, I think the Celtics are kind of built to be a regular season team. They don't really show up in the playoffs. If I have to pick right now, I'm going to pick the Nuggets to repeat, but this first round series against the Lakers will definitely be interesting. I always love a good opportunity to take down the Lakers because they always have a sector of delusional fans that swear they're going to win it all. Like, it's one thing to root for your team to win it all. It's another thing to be like, bro, we're going to win it all. We got LeBron and AD. It's like, yeah, you got the team that got you to the fucking 9 seed or whatever the fuck you were. Like,
you know,
it's nothing special.
Them making the conference championship last year was remarkable. I honestly don't think that that's looked at the way it should. Like, LeBron had a foot injury. He was 38 years old. Like, that was remarkable. Yeah. I don't think this team is quite as good as that team. So I don't foresee another unexpected run out of them. I think they could have shocked the world against Oklahoma City, but I just don't see it happening. I mean, LeBron's going to play his ass off and see his hair, man. That guy's hair is not good, and that's coming from me, dude. Like, it's time to give up LeBron. I'm getting close to giving up, but LeBron needs to join me.
Hey. I'm getting close too. I just keep it a little longer than you do on the general basis.
Oh, it would look awful if this thing was long.
okay.
I had a fucking wiener coming out of my hand.
I'm going with the Nuggets to repeat. I am very excited to see how Oklahoma City shows up in the playoffs. They are such a fun team to watch, and now I'm excited to see what they can do when it matters. And also, shout out to Chet Holmgren for all the people that were saying he's fragile, me included. I will 100% out myself. I did not think he was going to really hold up in the NBA.
Fantastic.
Played all 82 games, so good for him. Props. I will absolutely take the L on that.
And he's not going to win Rookie of the Year because he's literally playing against Christ himself.
I'm glad I was wrong about it. So, I'm also glad I was wrong about Wemby, although they managed him a lot more than the Thunder managed Wemby. But Wemby did not play all 82 or any stretch of the imagination, but he played enough to win Rookie of the Year, so good for him. Real quick, to touch on the WNBA draft, So I tuned in because there were a couple of UConn players that were expected to get drafted, and they did. Aliyah Edwards went to, I believe, the Washington Mystics. Nika Mule to the Seattle Storm. God,
yes.
My brain was yelling at me and was like, Supersonics. I'm like, that's not fucking right.
Kraken.
So shout out to them. The big thing I want to talk about here is just Caitlin Clark is a fucking needle mover, man. If we didn't already know that based on the Women's College National Championship being, I think it was the most viewed one of all time by far. Pat, the previous most viewed WNBA draft on ESPN peaked at 600,000 viewers. This one had 2.1 million. Like, it is wild. And I'm so happy that we have a player that is going to be able to bring more eyes and more attention to the WNBA, because for all the jokes that people make about the league, and look, you don't have to tune in, you don't have to watch if you don't want to, but like, it is high quality basketball. Like, if you just see some of the shittier clips that people post online, they're just posting those out of context to make you think that this is a terrible brand of basketball. It's not. If you watched and enjoyed the Women's College Championship or the Women's Final Four, the WNBA is a much higher level of play than that, because it's all the best players in the world.
Lower stakes, though, is the
lower issue. Stakes. But I mean, hey, tune in for the playoffs if you want, like, just for that. And I'm trying to do that myself, but I'm glad we have a player, a representative like Caitlin Clark, to really kind of carry the torch of making women's basketball more prevalent, because it's good.
She went and played in the Big Three and made a fuck ton of money and had, you know, more eyeballs on her. But I think she's going to move the needle. But unfortunately, I don't think she's going to move the needle for the whole sport. I think she's just going to move the needle for games that she plays in. Like, you know, I'm not going to tune in and watch, you know, or, you know, someone's not going to tune in and watch the Connecticut Sun against the Las Vegas Aces. Like, no, it's going to be Fever games. Or nothing, which is still progress, which is still moving in the right direction. I saw tickets, when the Fever played the Connecticut Sun, and ridiculous.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. Like, you might have to pay to get into the casino that night. Let alone, but still, regardless, it's great. It's great bringing attention to a really good sport. You know, if you like basketball, you're going to like this. It's different. Of course it's different. Guys in the NBA are bigger, faster, stronger, can dunk, but I think that makes it harder. Obviously it makes it harder for these girls. They have to, you know, be a lot more creative. They just can't be run and dunk man like Giannis. So
if you like basketball, if you like the flow of the game and just the fundamentals and if you really appreciate how the sport is played, like, you can very much appreciate the WNBA. It's like, people, you don't have to watch it, but the people that slander it as if it's not basketball, that tells me that they're not real basketball fans. And, like, again, that's not to say if you don't watch it, you're not a basketball fan. But, like, if you act like it's not even remotely up to par, I just think you're wrong, and I think you haven't given it a real chance. So shout out to Caitlin Clark for that, and I agree with you, Pat. It's not going to be an immediate, like, boon to all these other teams, but it's about it being a slower build. Like, I think she's the right type of player to slowly grow the game. Like, as much as, you know, Breanna Stewart is a monster and won 4 straight national titles and then went to the WNBA, her style of play didn't lend itself to being such a big game grower. Caitlin Clark shooting from the goddamn parking lot is the kind of thing that gets more casual eyes on the sport. So it's going to be a very good for the growth of the game. All right, we'll finish out here with a couple of viewer questions.
We just got a letter. We just got a letter. We just got a letter. Wonder who it's from.
Let's do about 2 of them here, I think, Pat. First, we'll do, which team would be better, the Cardinals with Marvin Harrison Jr. or the Chargers with Rome Odunze? I think I'm going with the Chargers here. If they actually draft a receiver, which they should, and give Justin Herbert a weapon under the new tutelage of Jim Harbaugh, I very much think the Chargers would be, finally, I mean, I say this every year, but an actual thorn in the side of the AFC.
Yeah, I agree, just because of the fact that Justin Herbert is a lot better than Kyler Murray, does not have these extensive and recent injuries. I still think Kyler's going to bounce back and have a solid year, and obviously with his running, he will be drafted as a QB1, but I just think Justin Herbert gives him the edge, and like I said, very little competition. Very, very little. There's more competition. That's crazy. There's more competition in Arizona, I think, than in Los Angeles. That's nuts, but it's what it is right now.
Yeah, and then I like this question. If New England was to trade out of the first round, which quarterback outside of the top 6 would you be most excited about? First of all, trade out of the first round, I hope you mean trade back, because if we don't get whatever team's first rounder in this draft that they're trying to trade up, I will be very sad. But if your question is, what if we don't get a quarterback, you know, in the first round and we have to take one outside of that sort of big 5 of quarter, or I guess outside of the big six of quarterbacks, who would it be? I think it's Spencer Rattler. I think Spencer Rattler's almost in a tier of his own. Like, you've got kind of the big three, I think, at the top. And then, like, McCarthy's kind of in a tier of his own. Then you've got Penix and Nix. And then I think Spencer Rattler's in a tier of his own just because Spencer Rattler's the guy that, you know, at one point was expected to be the number one overall pick in whatever draft he ended up entering.
Yeah,
and
God, that was 100 years ago.
I know. His college career just sputtered out. I think he started to find his footing a little bit toward the end of his college career, and maybe there's something to build on. With that said, it's inherently unlikely that any quarterback that you take later actually works out. I mean, we like to remember the ones that do, the Russell Wilsons, the Dak Prescotts, the Tom Brady's, but it's a very, very, very low hit rate. So I'll say Spencer Rattler with the caveat that I will be very upset if the Patriots don't get one of these top three or at least four. I mean, I will bitch if we take J.J. McCarthy, but at least shocked. It's someone. I would be very upset if we didn't take one of those guys.
I would obviously not for the Patriots because I don't really care, but my favorite out of the top six is Joe Milton. I mean, obviously he's a project, but he has shown the ceiling that a lot of guys that are probably going in his range haven't. But again, you're working on a project. You don't want that. But again, I think the Patriots are going to get one of the top three. I would be baffled if they traded out unless they got a king's ransom for that pick. So, I don't see it happening.
I saw a very funny tweet that said Joe Milton's pro comp is Josh Allen when he has to play the Jets defense.
Oh dear! That's dear.
That's what Joe Milton is just at all times. All right, guys, thank you for tuning in to Off the Bench again. Next week's show, Pat, Monday we're doing our mock draft show. Monday we'll be doing our mock draft show. What time are we doing Monday, Pat?
We do the normal time anytime.
Okay. All right. So we will probably stick to our 7:30 Eastern time on Monday. So stick around stay tuned for that mock draft episode. Long awaited will be here, and should be a good one. So thank you
guys
for tuning
in. Hopefully you
get more than one right. I don't know. Don't put that pressure on us. For Pat Gustafson, I'm Brandon Carney, and we'll see you guys next week.
Chili's is back, baby, back, baby, back.